Breaking news, this is your World War III update. Day X is approaching, and those Christian eschatologists must be loving this right now. Years of ridicule finally vindicated as Gog versus Magog starts to materialize with the Russians and the Iranians going up against the West. The war in Lebanon has now officially begun, according to Western media. The ground invasion is apparently where the war begins and is demarcated. So I guess the last year of firing missiles back and forth, that wasn't a war. It's only a war now, even though they just did a decapitation strike of the entire command structure of Hezbollah. They've been bombing Beirut for the last week and a half, and they did one of the largest cyberkinetic attacks, the largest cyberkinetic attack in history. But the war officially begins today, because a handful of Israeli troops went over the border to go do some scouting. But realistically, what's happening is you have about five divisions of Israeli troops that are about to descend upon southern Lebanon. There's this 40 kilometer by 40 kilometer area, which is mountainous, varied terrain. I'm sure it's deeply entrenched with all types of subterranean fortifications that they're going to have to navigate. That's about 1,600 square kilometers of territory, the topography of which is going to be far more challenging than it was in the Gaza Strip. So I'm assuming that they're not going to go in here fully until they have massive amounts of air support and bombardment laid down and soften up these targets. Regardless, the question is, are you going to be able to find the targets if they're all underground? This is a much larger territory than the Gaza Strip, and they don't have the advantages, all of the advantages, as I should say, that they had there. Now, if you want to know how close we are to World War III, take a look at what happened today, guys. This is incredible. This is a Russian Tu-95 nuclear-capable bomber flying off the coast of Alaska. Now, when they say flying off the coast of Alaska, you got to understand that Russia and the United States touch, okay? So when we say flying off the coast of Alaska, the Russians just view that as Russia. So just understand the semantic games that are being played. But nonetheless, Tu-95 nuclear-capable bomber. This is routine. This happens all the time. But the flyby is not routine. So you have a Russian Su-35, one of their most advanced fighter jets, with what appears to be a very confident pilot coming within a few plane lengths of this F-16 in this very unnerving close brush in. That is how close. And I'm glad that this happened, because it signifies just how high tensions are and how close we are to nuclear Armageddon right now. Some new changes have been updated today in the Russian nuclear doctrine. Not the stuff that we talked about last week, but some additional things that are very concerning. And this close brush in signifies that tensions are riding sky high right now, no pun intended. Vladimir Putin was rushed to the Kremlin for some reason today. We're not sure exactly why. We can presume it might have something to do with the official ground invasion of Lebanon, which of course impacts the balance of power in that region. It can create lots of instability. There's implications for Russia inside Syria. And of course, one of their biggest allies in the region, Iran. So it could have been about something completely unrelated. For all we know, it was about maybe there was a nuclear incident between NATO and Russia that we just didn't know about, that's happening right now, and we don't know, and everybody's distracted by this Israeli stuff. Because at the end of the day, you know, Israel fighting a war with Hezbollah is not really something that should command the attention of the entire planet when you really think about what it is. The only reason why it does is because you have nuclear weapons involved, and it's a nuclear power and a rising potential nuclear power that are about to do the man dance. And that's problematic. So, but above and beyond that, in terms of like quantitatively, in terms of the numbers, really the Ukraine war is a much, the implications of that are far more severe if things get out of hand. Now, of course, if Israel thinks that it is going to be overwhelmed, it will potentially use nuclear weapons. And of course, the issue with that is, as I stated in my video yesterday, is that the Americans have an advantage over the Russians in that they are essentially fully in control of what Israel does, by and large. I know people think the tail waves the dog, but understand that Israel is a proxy of the United States. It's basically another state. And they leverage it in the same way that they're leveraging Ukraine to act as a battering ram in the Middle East. And as such, if Israel has nuclear weapons, America has nuclear weapons. Now, because Israel's nukes are off the books, they don't count in the grand tally. Therefore, the Americans have a distinct advantage over the Russians. And even if you combine the French and the British nukes with the American nukes, that edge that they get from Israel's possible hundreds of nuclear weapons of all shapes and sizes creates a distinct disadvantage for the Russians. And that could mean the difference between winning and losing a full-blown nuclear war, believe it or not. Now, if you don't think that they want a war with Iran, take a look at what Bibi has to say. Today, he's trying to incite a civil war in Iran while all of this is going on. I just want to check my mic levels. We're good. Okay, here we go.
I speak a lot about the leaders of Iran. Yet at this pivotal moment, I want to address you, the people of Iran. I want to do so directly, without filters, without middlemen. Every day, you see a regime that subjugates you make fiery speeches about defending Lebanon, defending Gaza. Yet every day, that regime plunges our...
He's trying to... I mean, it's a three-minute speech. I'm not going to bore you with the whole thing. He's trying to incite civil unrest in Iran. This is something they've tried for years. They always end up failing. But something I will say, it does appear right now that the Ayatollah's commands are not being honored by the standing president. The current president of Iran is not very popular right now. In fact, there's thousands of people in the streets saying, why aren't you doing anything about Hezbollah? Why aren't you doing anything about Sinwar being assassinated? Why aren't you doing anything about the IRGC generals that are falling left and right? And understand that the IRGC, the Islamic or Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, they are actually in charge, or they're the ones who are the, they're up in the ranks. If you were to look at Hezbollah in terms of Hezbollah's capabilities, I think Hezbollah's hands were tied in this conflict by the IRGC. So Hezbollah arguably are puppets of the IRGC, as far as I know. It's not that simple, but more or less in terms of the big guns, in terms of how the big weapons get from Iran into the hands of Hezbollah, the IRGC are kind of the middle, the intermediary between all that. So you don't fire the longer range heavy ordnance missiles unless given the green light by the IRGC. So all that it means that Nasrallah and his henchmen have been taken out is that the IRGC assumes those roles. They're interoperable military organizations. So while it's true that the leadership of Hezbollah has been decapitated, that's not even anywhere near close to the head of the snake. Okay, the head of the snake is arguably, from Israel's point of view, it is the Iranian Ayatollah. So it's important to understand what's going on here. So this guy is very unpopular right now. And remember the timeline of events, guys. Right now, they're protesting in the streets. There's thousands of people in Iran protesting. Remember the timeline of events, okay? What happened in April? Israel attacks generals of the IRGC inside sovereign Iranian territory at their embassy in Syria. Iran responds when they were led by the President Raisi at the time, who mysteriously died in a helicopter accident just about a month and a half later. They retaliated with one of the biggest salvos of missiles and drones in history. Now, it was widely telegraphed, the most telegraphed punch in human history. But nonetheless, they responded, and that appeased a lot of the critics. Iran, you know, asserted itself, and Israel didn't really do much back in response, at least not as far as we know. Now, since that time, we've had the assassination of the top guy in Hamas on Iranian soil, and I believe it was on the inauguration day of this president, okay? We've had the decapitation of the entire Hezbollah command. So these are all Iranian proxies. And we've had IRGC generals dropping left and right. We just had another Syrian attack in Damascus today on high-ranking leaders in the IRGC and Hezbollah. So day after day, we're seeing all of their vassals, their proxy leadership start to be assassinated. And this guy has done virtually nothing. Now, the question is, why has he done nothing? Why is Vladimir Putin being rushed to the Kremlin so abruptly? Understand that right now, and this is what I forgot to talk about with this, the prime minister of Iran, or the prime minister of Russia, he goes by a name that most people are not familiar with. There is a prime minister in Russia, Mikhail Mishustin. He was visiting with the president of Iran. So a very important meeting. He was visiting with the top dog in Iran. They claim to be talking about economic matters. Okay, I think this might just be a smokescreen. I'm starting to suspect that either these guys have a very grand Day X master plan with the Russians. They know Day X is coming, and that's that day when it's for all the marbles, right? Because Iran knows as soon as it really attacks Israel, and I mean really attacks Israel, America gets involved, and we're likely talking about nuclear weapons at that point. Iran is likely in possession of some Russian missile defense tech, and we see how important missile defense is in these conflicts. Missile defense means the difference between Israel flying its F-35s and F-15s with impunity and bombing wherever they want at will, or not doing that. If you have good missile defense, they're probably not going to risk that. So it's important to understand that if the Russians have provided Iranians with the state-of-the-art missile defense technology that is trained to identify these types of fighter jets, because the Russians are in Syria right now. They see everything with their radars. So they know everything that's going on. So they've probably collected immense amounts of data on NATO capabilities, which could possibly be why NATO is so reluctant to put those capabilities into the war in Ukraine. But that's another story. And if Iran has that capability, that's going to pose a big problem for the United States. And in addition to that, Iran is incredibly close to being able to achieve nuclear weapons. It is not a stretch at this point in time when we see Russia updating their nuclear doctrine, decentralizing their nuclear program. And I'll talk about that in just a moment, what that means. And it's not a stretch. I know some people think, oh, the Russians will never give, you know, the Iranians nuclear weapons. I mean, we're in the age of unprecedented everything, man. You know, anything can happen at this point in time. The Russians giving Iran nukes, that's not even, you know, that's not even a big deal at this point. They might not give them nuclear weapons per se, even though some people suspect that they already have. In a similar way with Belarus, they've provided them some cover in that respect. I don't believe that to be the case. I don't think there's enough evidence to support that. But it would not be difficult for Russia to provide Iran with the means to achieve a nuclear weapon if they haven't already, okay? Because they have the deployment systems. I'm sure there's just a few more ingredients they need, and they got it covered. And once they have that figured out, just like North Korea, what are you going to do? You can't go to war with a nation if they have over 10 nukes, because it would just mean Armageddon. And with Iran, it would definitely mean Armageddon for the global economy, because we're talking about the Strait of Hormuz, where something like, I don't know, what is it? Half of the world's oil and gas transit. So not gas, but oil transits. So this is a very crucial region, maybe not half, I think it's less than that, but a significant enough amount that it would cause negative repercussions, wild repercussions throughout the entirety of the global economy. So you're starting to see now this relationship solidifying between Iran and Russia. And I don't know what this meeting was about with Vladimir Putin tonight, but I'm guessing that it had something to do with Middle Eastern tensions. The Kremlin really is the wild card at this point. You have Benjamin Netanyahu trying to get Iran to go to war with itself. They're putting out all of this fake news about spies, and as there definitely are spies, but it's causing suspicions, it's causing paranoia within the leadership. I presume that if I'm anybody in a leadership position, unless you're complacent and on the Darwinian chopping block, you got to be looking at everybody around you and wondering and really trying to do some sort of screening of everybody, because clearly there's numerous moles in the ranks. That's the only way that they're going to be able to have that type of intelligence. It requires human intelligence. As good as they are with tech, it requires human intelligence. And this is why back earlier this year, my prediction is eerily coming true. Remember what I said in January. This is the World War III update. I have some bad news. We're going to be going to war with Iran, and it is going to start much sooner than people think. We will be in a state of high-intensity conflict with the nation of Iran, not its proxies, the actual state of Iran, before the U.S. election. Mark my words, unequivocally. Now remember, that was before the Trump assassination. That was before Trump threatened to blow all of the Iranian cities to smithereens. That was before the attack on the Iranian generals at the Syrian consulate. That was before Iran responded, before the death of the Iranian president, which is incredibly sus now when you really look at this whole picture. But that was before all this. And it was just clear to me at the time, you can go back and watch that video, what was going to transpire. Everything was being set up, all the paperwork and all the House resolutions passed that are trying to vilify Ukraine for the nuclear program. Same textbook, weapons of mass destruction justification to go into a state of war. And that is why today you have the Americans committing thousands more troops just in case things backfire. You know, the United States likes to indemnify itself by trying to put distance between itself and its vassals, saying Ukraine didn't tell us what they were going to do with all our weapons and intelligence that we've been providing them. Israel didn't tell us what they were going to do with our state-of-the-art technology. Okay, like as if we're just, you know, oblivious idiots. So they love to try to indemnify themselves by having this this division, and it creates a plausible deniability of sorts that, well, maybe they didn't know, and everybody knows they knew, because if they actually didn't want Israel or Ukraine to do something, they would simply stop sending weapons, and they certainly wouldn't send backup, okay? Pentagon sends thousands of troops to the Middle East in participation of Israeli ground operation in Lebanon. You know, they wouldn't be doing that. So this is a tripwire. Guys, this is the war. This is the big war that's coming. It's coming in the Middle East. It's going to be big. It's going to be bloody. What was that guy? That Russian guy, Zhirinovsky? Man, was that guy prophetic. He predicted this down to the year. He said that in Iran, we are going to see untold atrocities not seen in Iran or Ukraine. And take a look at what's going on in Ukraine. I got to show you guys this. We got so much news today to cover. My God, take a look at this. This is one of the best, not the best because it sucks, but this is one of the most vivid demonstrations of a thermobaric bomb that I've seen, because it really shows you the scale. So you can see this is I think this might be Ugladar, definitely somewhere in the Donbass where they're fighting in Ukraine. And you can see these series of structures here. Now take a look at this bomb. Thermobaric bomb. I've seen thermobaric bombs before. You see them at night. They look like nukes. You see them usually not from this nice aerial vantage point with a telephoto lens, but take a look at this. This is absolutely insane. Look at that. Like, that looks like something out of a movie. Like, this is the apocalypse, man. Like, look at that. That is absolutely incredible. Just the power of those thermobaric bombs. And to my point, Zhirinovsky said that Iran is going to be worse than this. And I mean, arguably already, the stuff we've seen in Gaza, I mean, that's the stuff of nightmares if you've been following that closely. So they're saying that this meeting with the Prime Minister of Russia and the President of Iran is to do with a gas deal that is supposed to cut the West out and create kind of a oligopoly, if you will, or they're going to essentially, because Russia and Iran, they collectively have 70% of the world's natural gas. So they're going to attempt to blockade that energy from the West. And so now you can see why the stakes are so high in this conflict. Now, they claim that they're playing that economic game, but for all we know, there were other things discussed. Now, I don't think this guy is the guy they would send for security-related matters. They would send Sergei Shoigu or some member of the National Security Council. But you never know. This could just be a cover for something much bigger, because indeed, we will see the war with Lebanon ensue. All this shit that they're saying, you know, they always say, oh, it's just going to be limited. It's not going to be big. And then every single time, we've been saying for a year that this war with Lebanon is coming. It's taken a lot longer. We prematurely ejaculated our opinion earlier in the year, as we typically do. But understand that, I mean, everything is there. As incredulous as people must be to all the data, you cannot deny that everything that I've said on this channel is coming true. It's just coming true much slower than we all anticipated. So if you actually go back and you watch my videos, well, I may be wrong in terms of the imminence of some of the threats. Inevitably, the outcome is the same. Okay, now here's how you know that the IDF, this is an actual video by the Israeli Defense Forces that they put out, and it shows all of the command structure of presumably Hezbollah and some members of the IRGC going all the way up to the top dog, to Nasrallah himself, and they still have many dominoes left to fall, signifying that Nasrallah is not the top dog. Okay? The dominoes falling means, and the fact that Hezbollah is still operational at all, that tells you that the true power behind Hezbollah has not been taken out yet, which of course is the IRGC and ultimately the Ayatollah. So if they're signaling there that they're going to start assassinating Iranian politicians, the Ayatollah possibly, and at this point you cannot put anything past Israel. When you're given a pass to act with such impunity, to essentially do whatever you want, despite all of the uproar from all these international humanitarian organizations, United Nations, the ICC, you can basically do whatever you want. How could they not think that they're next? I mean, they are next. The Israelis are going to try to decapitate the Iranian political command. And I think that might be the line that gets crossed, or there may be a red line in there, but they've already, you know, begun targeting Iranian generals, Iranian, which are essentially IRGC generals, which IRGC numbers, I believe, are somewhere between 100 and 150,000 troops. That's just what we know about. More importantly, this is a big story that not a lot of people are talking about. So we all know about the nuclear doctrine updates, that Russia reserves a right now, this is different from before, to attack a country who is a non-nuclear country if attacked by conventional forces, if the conventional force strike is deemed to be sufficient enough to elicit such an attack. So what they essentially mean is, if Ukraine keeps firing all these drones at us, then we're going to potentially nuke them. Now, the United States has claimed, and I don't think this is true, that if Russia does use a nuke in Iran, they said this years ago, apparently this was one of the threats that was made. David Petraeus talks about this, and I don't know how much stock I put in that guy's perspective. He's kind of like a retired general, like a Ben Hodges, always, you know, going to the extreme of what USA is going to do, even though we haven't really seen that demonstrated at all. They can barely get JSON missiles to fire into Moscow at this point, but they will get those. That's definitely in the queue. It's coming. We know that if Russia, or at least they claim that if Russia were to use a nuke inside Ukraine, that the West would trigger Article 5 and they would do a conventional strike. They claim a conventional strike, which will completely decimate. Decimate is probably not the right word, because decimate, you know, reduced by a factor of 10%. We're really talking about, they claim that they're going to completely destroy all of Russian assets, which presumes that they would be able to do that. Now, is that just a lot of tough talk? Probably. Would the Russians respond by nuclear Armageddon? Yeah, they absolutely would. Now, however, the Russians are claiming that, hey, you keep firing at our ammo depots, you keep firing at our strategic targets, our nuclear radars, our nuclear bombers, our nuclear plants. So now you have to learn something called FAFO, okay? And recently, just 48 hours ago in the Volgograd region, 125 drones attacked an ammunition depot. This was after the new nuclear doctrine amendments were made, meaning that Ukraine has already officially breached that red line. And yet Russia didn't do anything because all these drones, fortunately, were shot down. This is allegedly a grass fire here, or perhaps not the explosive type of event as we've seen recently in the three ammunition depots that were blown up last week. Nonetheless, that was the intent behind it. So the intent was to cross the Russian red line. Now Russia is saying that they are decentralizing their nuclear capabilities. This is very important because this puts us in a whole other realm of DEFCON, or at least it should if anybody's paying attention, and I'm not sure there is at this point in time. Russian military now has the authority over nuclear strike conditions, the Kremlin says. What this means is that it's no longer going to be Vladimir Putin carrying around a briefcase. I'm sure he'll still have it. I'm sure he'll still be able to say yay or nay to a full-blown nuclear strike. But now his generals will be able to determine whether or not nuclear weapons get used. And if that's not one of the highest states of DEFCON from their perspective, I don't know what is. This is very serious. Very serious. This is even more serious than the nuclear doctrine changes itself, because so much can go wrong here. I mean, if a general has too much to drink one night and decides to make a bad decision and he's been delegated with that responsibility, things can happen. There's safeguards in knowing that it's one guy at the top who's surrounded by an advisory board who can say, you know, maybe it's not a good idea, or who can at the last minute maybe change his mind. It's something else if you have multiple people now who have this capability, who are closer to the front lines and may feel as though it's a more viable option than Vladimir Putin himself, okay? Because they'll precisely know when and where it's going to be utilized, or where it will be useful is a more important thing. So this is very concerning. This should be a video topic in and of itself, because this is not getting nearly enough attention. Remember last week I notified you that a subscriber messaged me and said that their utility bills now are coming with nuclear preparedness instructions. Okay, so that's how close we are, guys. And the Pentagon is sending troops to the Middle East. Putin is launching a regular conscription drive. So this is a very clever way of avoiding full-blown mobilization, but getting your population ready, expanding your reserves, and not just reserves, because a lot of Russian males, I presume, have went through this conscription program. They pull like about 150,000 people every year. You get your number pulled, you go into basic training for a year, which is way more than what most people are ever going to get in the West. And you don't really go into conflict or combat, but you could be called up if there's a mobilization. So this is a very clever thing for Putin to do, because what it does is it does all the pre-work for mobilization, so that when it's time to mobilize a couple million guys, you know that there's a couple guys who went through training. Even if that training was complete shit, at least they've had a little bit of training, which is going to be better. And if you're in the military for a year, you know, I mean, I'm presuming that that's a sufficient amount of time to pick up at least the basics, to know how to clean your gun, to be confident, you know, with the the space and just be confident with that type of the environment and the conditions, and learn how to, you know, drive all the vehicles that you're going to need to drive, just navigate a war zone. So, you know, big things are cracking, man. You guys need to be prepping right now. Like, if it's not this hurricane business, if it's not this shipping, what is it, a shipping strike of the longshoremen who work on the receiving the cargo vessels, they're going on strike in the East. We're talking about billions of dollars of goods which may not be accessible. Now, fortunately, it's not in the West, because I think that's where most of the shit from China comes from. Nonetheless, this is going to create a lot of disruptions, and it's not going to be good, okay? So if you want some perspective, I think we talked briefly about what is going on in Lebanon as we speak. Let me just refresh my page here to make sure that I'm not missing anything, because right now things are happening so fast at breakneck speeds that it is just incredible. We have attacks on a U.S. military base in Iraq tonight. We got the Houthis firing ballistic missiles at Tel Aviv. We got the cross-border incursion into Lebanon, as you can see here. And the topography of Lebanon is what's is so important for people to understand. Gaza was like invading a beach that was one of the most heavily surveilled and monitored places, you know, in the on the planet. Now, the advantage that Hamas had is that they had hostages, okay? Lebanon does not have hostages, which means that the Israelis can just completely light the place up indiscriminately without caring, which is pretty much what they did in the Gaza Strip, but they still had to be somewhat, you know, surgical in certain places. They don't have to do that in Lebanon. So that's the one disadvantage that the Lebanese have. And Hamas, you know, a lot of people say that they are a lesser trained force than Hezbollah, but they, up until this point, outlasted Hezbollah, who pretty much lasted all of, you know, what, a few days. So in terms of the seriousness and the how can you say, just the, they have a better control of their ranks. They're not, they clearly weren't as infiltrated with spies and still aren't to this day, unless the Israelis are lying about Sinwar being dead, which that he's the remaining leader, who apparently is constantly 24/7 being surrounded by like 21 hostages just so they can't take him out. You know, and if that guy is still alive, you have to give credit where credit is due in terms of their ability to stay alive longer than Hezbollah, despite being one of the most heavily surveilled. So we're going to see what happens. Hezbollah has a lot of anti-tank capabilities. This is the moment they've been waiting for. In fact, I think they're going to try to welcome and hope that the Israelis come onto their turf, because that's where the playing field will be a little bit more even, and the air superiority, while it will still account for a lot, it's a whole other different can of worms when you're going up against a guerrilla fighting force that is dug in very deep into the underground with these tunnel systems that many of them are going to be resistant to bunker busters. And even with the Nasrallah bunker buster, they had to use, what was it, like 80 tons of bunker busters. So, I mean, that is millions and millions of dollars. You can't do that for every single tunnel. I mean, you would run out of stuff. So while it's true that they can get to any tunnel if they hit it with enough, if they just hit it one after another, after another, after another, but you can't do that for every single one. And Hezbollah's got some deep tunnels that the Iranians help them dig. So it's, you know, it's gonna not going to be an easy fight from this point forward. This is Tehran, the cryptic signaling that revenge is nigh, blah, blah, blah. Talk is cheap. They may not even do anything at this point. Who knows? Who really knows? But I think they're going to be forced to, because clearly the intent of Netanyahu and his cronies is that they want a war with Iran. And before the election, to force somebody's hand, and maybe it's going to do the Biden administration a favor if American troops are taken out and act as a tripwire. If they get pulled into this conflict and you say get a few platoons of American troops ended in this conflict with Hezbollah, then that might be grounds to send in more and make a formal declaration of war on Hezbollah. But it's looking almost more likely that we're likely to see a civil war at this point ensue, and that's what they're trying to do, get the Sunnis fighting with the Shiites and get the Lebanese government fighting with Hezbollah, and, you know, so that's going to be, it's going to be a real messy situation very soon. Now, people are poking fun at this interaction with Sergei Lavrov and the president of Burkina Faso, which is an African country that recently broke free of the post-colonial corporate domination from the West. Recall all that stuff that was happening in Northern Africa earlier this year when I believe it was Sudan and a few other countries or the other countries who were kicking out the French because the French were stealing all the resources and, you know, the same old story. Well, Lavrov and his Burkina Faso counterpart signed a deal for a space-based anti-weapons treaty. Now, a lot of people are thinking, you know, these guys don't have space-based capabilities. The Russians are, in fact, going to help them build out a telecommunications satellite infrastructure. And they're making a point of signing a contract here that is saying that we won't weaponize space. Now, this is clearly a signal to the West, I think. The reason why this is being broadcast at all, and obviously these guys don't have the capability to weaponize space, but they would if the Russians empowered them with that capability, or just to telegraph to the West that, hey, remember all that thing that went down 6 months ago where you guys accused us of weaponizing space and putting nukes in space and we accused you of the same? We're still aware of what's going on. We still understand the strategic stakes at play. And we're making, you know, just a point of putting you on notice that we are, how can you say, this is signaling. This is a form of nuclear blackmail in another sort of way, I think. But, you know, who knows? Maybe they just are worried about Burkina Faso putting weapons on satellites. But I just can't see it. This is just a map of the port strike and all the implications. We're talking about billions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of workers being impacted as a result of that. In terms of what's going on with the weather's weird, to say the least. We're now seeing global sea surface temperature anomaly, the highest in history once again. So every year prior to 2023 is down here, okay, with a lot of the years back in the 80s and 90s recording lows in terms of temperature, below average temperature. Now, in just the last 2 years, we are seeing absolute record highs in terms of temperature, in terms of the sea surface temperature. We had a climatologist on by the name of Leon Simons who explains precisely why this warming is occurring. And it's in addition to the background stuff do with the greenhouse effect and all that, but it really has something to do about the sulfur, the lack of sulfur being used in the fuels that cargo vessels use. That was canceled in 2020, and that actually created something which enhanced the greenhouse effect. Basically, you'll have to go and watch the video that we did with him. It's been a while since I spoke with him, but he explains it in that there's a aerosol radiance that takes place. So the more pollution there is in the air, the more it reflects the heat. And this is scientifically validated. I know it sounds crazy, but it's the truth. And when you actually take that pollution out of the air, it actually causes things to heat up even faster. Okay, as crazy as that sounds. So that is his prediction as to why you're seeing this wild aberration from the norm here. So anyways, it's getting hot. The storms are going to get crazier and crazier as we're seeing in Helene right now. But surprisingly, it's been an otherwise quiet hurricane season so far. Verizon was down today for hundreds of thousands of people across the United States. They didn't provide an explanation as to why. There were numerous other outages reported. So cyber attack, maybe. There was a major chemical explosion. This thing looks apocalyptic, doesn't it? In Georgia, as many of you probably know, all kinds of weird colorful smoke emanating from that disaster zone. So they're saying it's chemical, it's biological. Either way, it's probably not good. State of emergency declared there. Kim Jong-un says, screw Donald Trump, no more Mr. Nice Guy if he gets reelected again. We are not going to be on the friendly terms that we were last time. And of course, now, compared to what North Korea was then, North Korea had a handful of nukes. Now they have about 50 to 80 nukes. Donald Trump, who at once was not a fan of cryptocurrency, he said this, I think this was maybe a year or so ago, 2 years ago, I'm not a fan of Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, which are not money and whose value is highly volatile and based on thin air, unregulated crypto. This is when Trump was, you know, really speaking the truth. Assets can facilitate unlawful behavior, including drug trade and other illegal activity. Now, that I don't really care about because as a freedom-loving person, I want freedom. I don't care if that means that other bad people are going to use it to be free. That's just the nature of things. It's not, you know, the gun that kills the person, it's the person that kills the person. Anyways, today he says, I promise to make America great again, this time with crypto. Okay, that's quite the switch. World Liberty Finance is planning to help make America the crypto capital of the world. The whitelist for eligible persons is officially open. This is your chance to be a part of this historic moment. So, yeah, buddy's drank the Kool-Aid. Unfortunately, he's not telling people to buy gold. Gold slightly pull back, which is normal. You know, you want to see a pullback every once in a while. So I think gold is down like 1% or so. So it's down to like 2650, which is still crazy when you think about it, how much money that is in terms of market cap added in just the last year. But it's good when you see a healthy pullback like that, a little bit of consolidation. Regardless, the price of gold really doesn't matter. It's more of a reflection of the purchasing power of the dollar. The price of gold is going up. That just means the dollar is worth less. These are all the power outages as a result of Hurricane Helene, major power outages. We don't just prepare for doomsday here, folks. We prepare for natural disasters like this. Now, fortunately, I live far away from a hurricane zone. Florida is nice and all, but quite frankly, probably the worst place to be at this time in human history. If you can, I would just encourage you to get out. I know it's hard. I know it's a great life, but man, when the shit goes down, that's going to be the absolute worst place to be. The beaches, you know, the weather. I mean, just everything about that place is amazing until shit hits.